to our guest expert session. I've got Poppy and Jeff with us today, and we are going to cover something very practical and relevant. So I'm very excited to have you both here with us and to share your pearls of wisdom with our members of the TCC tribe. So thank you so much for coming along.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much for having us. We have so enjoyed making our international connection with you over the past year and a half. So yeah. It's been really exciting.
Yeah, it's brilliant to be able to be in this community where we can share and help one another out. So I'm extremely grateful for that. And Poppy and Jeff, I know that you've got a podcast and you've got a book and you're very busy people and you've got lots going on. So would you mind sharing a little bit about you and what you do?
Okay.
Go ahead.
So we started in 2014. We'll just give you a little quick background. We were college sweethearts many, many years ago and got split up because I graduated and moved back to a state far away, and we never had any contact for 32 years. So we got back together and
and you gotta show, pick up, you're showing the picture.
Oh my gosh.
There we are. Here we are in college, and that's 32 years later. Lift it up so they can see it.
Wow.
That's 32 years. Yes, the photo was in the same place at our college. We went back and remade the photo.
So we didn't have any contact for 32 years, and we're giving you sort of a long backstory here about what we're doing. At the time that we reconnected with no contact, I was doing my art therapy work. I was a registered art therapist working with children who had experienced some trauma, and also an adolescence, and also with some elderly who had dementia, cancer, Parkinson's, the whole Alzheimer's, the whole gamut. And Jeff was working in sales and for a company. And we got back together, we got married, and it was great. And we're trying to figure out, like, why did we break up? Because
how do we screw this up? Something was so perfect. How did I screw it? I always say I have a good excuse, ladies. I was a 21-year-old guy, therefore an idiot. And I've never yet found a woman who disagrees with any of that. They all nod along. Yes, they're stupid. Yes, right. Yeah.
So we decided, and then I was teaching psychology at a college in Florida for many years. And we decided, you know what, let's take a leap of faith. Let's write a book about our story and our journey. And maybe we can help people learn to communicate a little bit better, give them some strategies to create boundaries in their relationships and to not be a people pleaser anymore, or whatever those things are, and help them really become empowered and appreciate their self-worth.
And learn how to communicate very effectively. We even created tools. I have a little thing here, our emotional clock, that takes people through how you get in trouble in relationships by not communicating effectively. And we always say people call us up for relationship coaching when they hit this bottom position. The 6 o'clock is where they're kind of hitting a wall and they're trying to figure out what they're doing.
And we'll go into that a little bit in a bit, because I think that would be helpful too. So we took a big risk, financial risk. We quit our jobs and went heads first into writing a book and then creating a coaching practice where we help people with relationships. And so about 3 years ago, we became certified family law mediators, helping people in relationships that needed some support, either ending or maybe just mediating. And some of them had, some people had children, so we were helping them create parenting plans and that. And then last year in 2020 in March, we left Florida after 17 years and moved to Wisconsin, where I'm from.
Which is kind of like Toronto, Sarah, cold and, you know, brutal, you know.
And the New Zealanders, is near Chicago. So we moved back and we discovered that so many of the people that had come to us for 7 years had been in relationships which were unhealthy because they all had like one underlying component, and that was the women were always in relationships with men, usually, who had narcissistic tendencies. And so that became sort of our specialty to help women overcome those challenges. If you've ever heard of gaslighting, that was something that we helped them to understand and recognize when it happened. So we created this discrete group for women, and that's still going. We've had that for a little over a year.
I'm going to take a leap of faith here that I bet some of you all in that industry have dealt with men with narcissistic tendencies.
So, or women too. I mean, it does go both ways. And we had men clients as well who had a female that was narcissistic, but I would say 80% of it was, which is why we just kept it to a group of women. And they've all bonded beautifully and they're in our membership. Just like I'm sure you and Corinne have also done that.
But one of the things we really focus on is helping them gain the courage to take these leaps of faith, because you don't know where the next place is going to take you. But if you know you're in a spot that's not good, that's not healthy, you have to have faith that you can move forward. And part of the reason we wrote our book was to give people faith that you can find love again. You can find new relationships at work as long as you've taken the right steps. And Corinne, and I know you're guiding people to find all those things in their lives too.
And not even just in your love relationship, but in your work relationships.
Every aspect of your life.
To have people that treat you respectfully and are kind and thoughtful and considerate to you as it should be. So, and we work with those people too. So that's kind of in a long story, how we got to where we are today.
Thank you both. It's so fascinating. And I love hearing the story of how you have met. It's just such a romantic story to know that after all those years, you were able to find each other again, which is so beautiful.
Well, the funny thing about it too, Corinne, was that, you know, Poppy tried to find me three different times over those three decades because she knew that it was a complete misunderstanding, miscommunication. I, on the other hand, thought that she wanted nothing to do with me because the way it was such a rough ending and so poorly done. When I called her up after 32 years, after I found information about her online, I had no expectations of anything great. I expected maybe just, hi, fun talking to you, and maybe to get blown off again. I didn't know. And discovered that I was completely and totally 100% wrong about everything, and she never wanted to break up. And it was a most unbelievable conversation in my life where, boom, we were back together again. Literally in minutes, we were back where we were.
Just on the phone. We hadn't even seen each other.
No Zoom, no nothing. Just a silly old phone call.
No wonder why you're so passionate about communication. It makes perfect sense.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, I know for this session, we're focusing on communication, but in our group, I did a poll at the beginning of the week asking if has anyone worked with a narcissist or had a relationship with a narcissist. And you're right, Jeff, like within our industry, it is quite common. I've got a client who has taken a year off work because his rotational captain was a narcissist and he suffered severely from mental health issues as a result. So just to help us out, what makes a narcissist a narcissist, and any tips on how to deal with that behavior? And I know, Jackie, you nodded your head. So I'm just wondering, has anyone else worked with a narcissist?
I hear this term a lot, but I actually don't know the actual definition or how to like label that.
So one of the things that we did last year was there's a woman in the States who has a huge following, a Facebook group, and it's called One Mom's Battle. And she wrote a book, and her name is Tina Swithin. And she must have like 80,000 followers now of women and men who have poured their hearts out into story after story after horrific story of horrible narcissistic abuse. And so she's made it her case. I don't know how it is in other countries, but certainly in the United States, the family court system is really flawed and I would even say corrupt. And it is so damaging, especially for women with children. I mean, the children are like taken away from the mothers because the narcissistic father will, who has never spent any time with the children, will like sob in front of the judge and say, I just want to be with my kids. I don't care about anything else. And
just to define it a little bit.
So, but narcissism is three things. First and foremost, it's about control or power. It's usually about money. And above all else, it's winning, no matter what the terms are of that. And so the narcissist always gets like a dopamine fix whenever they feel like they've won or they've gotten control or they have gotten money of some sort. The reward center in the brain lights up for them. And while it seems sort of counterintuitive, the narcissist is also someone who has incredibly low self-esteem and self-worth.
It doesn't, you wouldn't think that's the case. You'd think because it'd be contrary.
Usually they're egocentric and braggadocious. And
that's because they're so insecure. That's the way they cover.
And so they have enormous issues that have never been dealt with, usually from childhood. Usually they come from, you know, some sort of trauma that they've experienced in childhood. And what happens is that they usually prey upon vulnerable, sweet women who are usually kind, thoughtful, people pleasers, and come off as kind of just sweet. And so they sort of take advantage of those women, and then they project their insecurities, their self-hatred onto that woman. And that's where gaslighting comes in, is that they make her believe that, and I'm just using male and female now, right now, they make her believe that whatever reality she thought might have happened, her intuition might tell her something that she was completely wrong. She read that wrong.
And she'll actually believe that she's the guilty party after a period of time. When enough gaslighting, these women will say like, well, I know I caused this. I know I brought this on. And many
and so
times
they accept the shame and the guilt, mm-hmm, and the blame for so many scenarios, even little tiny things. And it's unfortunately, it's so horribly manipulative that it might even be subconscious for the narcissist. They may not even know that they're doing it. Sometimes they do. But that the women, it's like a slow drip. It's just drip, drip, drip. And finally, after months and months, the woman doesn't even understand how she got to where she is. And she's a former shell of her former self. She's a shell of her former self.
And that's often when they come to us at, I mentioned that 6 o'clock on our emotional clock time, where they've hit a wall, and often the things they'll say to us are something like, am I crazy? Or, that's often the way the conversation would start. Did I misunderstand something? Or does anybody else have relationships like this? And so usually we start to define, understand, and we see it. That's why we have a support group, because it's very comforting to women when they see other women all just nodding their heads going, oh yeah, that's exactly the way it happens. That's the way it's done. And
what happens is the women in the group, they really get a lot of encouragement from one another, because lots of times, maybe like you, Corinne, we don't even have to say anything. We just facilitate our groups as Corinne is doing. And the other members of the group will say like, oh, wait a minute, time out. That's not okay. You should, you know, like they'll start a conversation, say, so this is what happened. And I know I'm totally to blame for it. And we're like, no,
stop right there. Nope,
so
no, you're not.
What happens is, even though they're out of the relationship with the narcissist, they're away from them, that pattern of gaslighting, they do it to themselves.
By the way, for any of those who aren't, that's time out in football, American football talk. Because no one's, I don't know if you all got that. So that's what that
So that's kind of the short end of it. But for this Tina Swithin, who starting to take on the court system and educate people in the court system, at least in the States, to understand how a narcissist will manipulate.
That's all the podcast.
And there's a woman named Dr. Romani, and you can find her on YouTube. I think she does a narcissistic little 20-minute thing every day. and she's very abrupt and not soft-spoken, but she's like
not subtle at all.
You just got to go right into it, and she'll say nope, she'll call it out, and she's very clear and direct about what is acceptable and what is not, and the motives behind a narcissist. So
did that define it pretty well? Or?
Yeah, usually like nurses, teachers, people that are in the service caring industry will fall prey to a narcissist. And so that's, you know, people that love to serve and to give, givers will be, because the narcissist is also very charming, could be very popular, could be very successful, very wealthy. And so many people on the outside will accept this narcissist because it doesn't, he or she doesn't show their true colors when they're out in public, but in a one-on-one situation, suddenly the veil comes off and these toxic, unhealthy behaviors tend to
And they always start very charming. They're wonderful at wooing someone into a relationship. And once they're in deeply, they start the chipping away gaslighting process. That's just...
So sometimes they'll take, sometimes we've seen in marriages, relationships, they will go after money and they'll say, you know, I just, you know, we could really afford to buy this new boat, or we could buy this new house. But I have to pay off that loan first. So I just don't know where I'll get the money. And so the people pleaser will be like, well, I have some money that I've put away for, you know, savings. And he goes, yeah, we'll reimburse that. We'll pay that back. And yeah, let's use that to pay off the debt. And then we can get a loan for this new house that we want to buy, so that I can set you up in a beautiful, you know, environment to which you should belong. And so that's how this slowly drips away. It's either money, power, control, and suddenly your identity. It's like, yeah. And if you dress up and you look pretty, maybe in public, they don't want other people looking at you. So they'll say, yeah, you don't need to wear that much makeup, and you should dress, you know, differently. Maybe wear some drabber colors or things not so flashy, because it makes you look, and then they'll put in an adjective. Maybe it makes you look cheap. Maybe it looks like a whore. You know, they might say something really bad. And of course, she doesn't want to feel that way. So she accommodates and adjusts. And so it's this slow manipulation and molding of this person because they feel threatened. And so they project that onto you. So
did you all have questions about this, or how do you want to move forward, Corinne?
So yeah, I was wondering if Jackie, if she feels comfortable in sharing a experience of working with a narcissist, so that, because I'm sure it would be relatable, so that we could learn just a couple of tips before you share what your content is for today. Would that be all right? And Jackie, are you comfortable in sharing?
Yeah.
Just getting Tim in.
Yeah, I worked with a first officer, and I'd been in the industry like 10 years when I came across this person. Like, he joined the boat, and suddenly nothing. He just continued everything, just ran me down the whole time. And I'd never had an issue before with crew food or meal times or anything.
A crew coach from whatever thing she's doing.
And then all of a sudden he just, you know, dinner was always late, or there was always just something all the time. And I really started questioning like what I was doing, you know, like, was I doing something wrong? Like, even wearing like yoga leggings and stuff, and he'd always make comments. And I was just kind of like, it's only me though. Like, what is going on here? But I think through all the work that I've done, I was kind of like, oh, he's not happy with himself. Like, he's, you know, trying to run someone else down to make himself feel better. So I, yeah, tried to sort of rise above it, but it didn't really work. being an officer and being friends with the captain, like, you know, I ended up leaving the boat because of it, and just, yeah, not in a good space. But that to me was, yeah, his sort of narcissist behavior of like finding someone to pick on to flex his power as well, because he could control what I was doing. You know, like, he would, you know, he didn't like what was for dinner or, you know, something like that, and just being really vocal about it in front of the crew and all that sort of stuff. And yeah, because to start with, he was nice to me and he would come and have chats with me and be like, you know, we're a team together, head of departments, you know. And I was like, oh yeah, okay, cool. And then it just went bad and got worse and worse. So
did you, would you, I just was going to ask you, did you feel when you first started that you had a pretty good, strong sense of self and that you felt confident about yourself?
Yeah. Like, I'd been on boats 10 years, you know, like I'd been on this boat for over 2 years. So I was like, I wouldn't still be here if it was that bad, surely, you know, like.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. Yeah. They like the confident person, but then they whittle them down to something else. So let me just ask you, when you decided to leave, what were some of the feelings that you felt when you were ready to leave? Did you think about it a long time? Was it an abrupt decision? Was it difficult? Were you afraid about what would be next?
Yeah, I was afraid of what was next because I'd sort of come to think that I couldn't, you know, could I still cook? Was my crew food good enough? You know, I was the sole chef, so I was doing guest and crew food. But yeah, it just got to that point where I really questioned, you know, everything. Right. Like
the thing that you're really good at.
That's the gaslighting again. They just chip away at you. Yeah.
So yeah, I'm a job
and. Yeah,
I know I'm good at cooking, and then afterwards you're like, wait a minute, am I?
Yeah, I really questioned, and I took 8 months off. I didn't get back on a boat for over 8 months after that. Spent a lot of time traveling and with friends, and you know, going back to people that I even sent messages to people that, you know, was it that bad? And they're like, no, it wasn't that bad. Like, where'd you get this from? Like, yeah.
And then Jackie, that's a very common process. You have to kind of go back to, you know, things you know you can trust, and that's kind of like this group was. We had the women can go, no, you're not, that isn't you. That's not what you're doing. That's not your fault, and your decision to leave. We compliment your courage to do that, because that's unfortunately one of the ways you have to deal with the narcissist, because you can't change them, you can't correct them, they can't, they don't want to be here, you know, they don't look at themselves as being flawed in any way, shape or form. They think they're just fine and dandy,
and they won't be held accountable for
never anything. Held accountable, never, ever.
No,
ever.
We try, like myself, the chief stew, and one of the chief engineers, like we actually sat down with the captain and we're like, this behavior is not, like all three of us, you know, three different departments went to the captain and we're like, this is not fair. Like, you know, even I could see him with some of the stews, like one of the girls, she'd eat a green apple 3 times a day and he started picking on her for that. And I was like, you can't do that. And that just only fueled his fire towards me.
Oh, right, more. Right. Oh yeah.
They're never so, wrong.
You can't correct them.
They're never wrong.
That's a big no-no.
No. So yeah, like, and the captain just, nothing really got done about it. So yeah, it all just sort of fell apart and quite a few of us left, but yeah.
Well, I think that's wonderful that you pivoted and you took a different course, even though it meant leaving that job. But when you're in that toxic environment, it's really hard to get out. It takes a lot of strength, courage, and you know, some insight to know yourself a little bit, some introspection. So we do applaud you for getting out. And now, are you working?
Yes, I am. I'm on rotation on a boat that's in New Zealand. So,
okay.
With another interesting management structure, but that's, yeah. But still, much happier.
Good. We're glad.
That's great.
Thanks for sharing your story, Jackie.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Right, I'm going to hand it over to you. I know we're already halfway into our session, but if you don't mind, yeah, sharing about communication and the term that you came up about, what did you say was No, it wasn't
cognitive bypass.
It is cognitive.
It's a fun term. We discovered this back to that little story about when I just one day thought about Poppy, and I was divorced and I've been dating someone, but it was ending. And I was like, whatever happened to Poppy? Whatever happened to that gal I was crazy about in college? And I found her, and I picked up the phone. She answered, and we quickly were, you know, both kind of just stunned that we were talking to each other. She was stunned that I actually found her and called. I was stunned that she quickly shared that she never wanted to break up. She probably broke my heart. And one of the things we were realizing is that we weren't being careful. We weren't choosing our words very carefully. We weren't being cautious. We weren't even thinking. We were speaking directly from our heart. We were just my heart and what I was thinking, I said it, you know. And so it was a wonderful thing to feel that comfortable and that confident, to be vulnerable, to be open, to be completely and totally honest. Because people are often very afraid to do that, because that's when you get vulnerable, don't want to share all that. I'm going to be too exposed. I might get hurt. And it was the most wonderful thing to have that immediate and complete and total connection in minutes, again, because we spoke directly from our hearts. And there was neither of us said, I'm going to do this when I get on the call. We just surprised ourselves.
There's no pre-planning of what you're going to say.
And it was a most wonderful moment to realize that you could be completely and totally honest with someone and speak exactly what you were thinking without having to be careful.
Or censor what you're thinking.
Right.
You know, and we didn't really notice it until after the call was over. I'm like, wow, oh my God, I said that. So have you, any of you ever had that experience where you say something and you're like, did those words just come out of my mouth and you're not even aware, but it just sort of came out? Has that ever happened? Okay, so you tell.
Yeah, you
tell
us nodded. You can say more if you want, Zoe. Come on. You're still on mute, Zoe, if you want to talk.
No, I don't really have a story in particular. I just.
All right.
Sometimes I just love to talk and I'll just say exactly what I'm thinking and then I'll just stop myself and I'm like, you have no idea what you're talking, like, you're not thinking about what you're saying, you're just speaking from the heart, and it's really nice to have people around that you can feel comfortable to do that.
Right.
That's right. Anybody else ever have that experience?
Yeah, I do. I feel, I think the more, I don't know if confident is the right word, but where you're able to kind of own certain experiences that you've been through, and then you can speak about it. It is vulnerable, but it's something you've been through, and maybe you don't know how the audience or how people will take it, but at the same time, you're embodying it, you're owning it. It's something you've been through. And so you don't really censor it, or I guess, do you know what I
right.
Censorship is definitely a part of it. Yes.
Yeah. And you can just be, I guess, raw, and it's great if you're with people that can totally, that they're not judgmental or they're not shocked, or, you know, you can just have a really honest conversation.
And that's when you know it's really great, Sarah, that's kind of a definition of it, when you can be open and they're completely receptive, aren't judgmental. You don't have to censor what you're saying. You can be completely honest.
So when going back to that phone call in 2010, when Jeff first made that phone call, I wasn't thinking like, oh, should I say this? Should I not say this? It just sort of happened. And it was irrelevant whether or not he would reject me or turn me down or whatever. So in other words, it's kind of an ego-less experience, that the ego is not involved at all. And, you know, if we can get to those ego-less moments in our lives, I think more people will come around to also doing the same thing.
Yeah, I guess the obstacle is making sure that it is a safe space to be vulnerable, right? Because, you know, like going back to like work with Brené Brown, you know, yeah. like you could be vulnerable with the wrong person and then mm-hmm. talking about, so it could backfire on you. You can't mm-hmm. just
right.
be vulnerable with the world. Like vulnerability does create connection, but it could also backfire if someone is judgmental. You know, if you say something to someone and then they do respond with judgment or distance, or, you know, that it can go the wrong way. So I guess it's important to find those people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And right. read and your audience.
Right. And if you, you know, sort of cultivate and develop your intuition, you'll be able to, you know, for lack of a better word, vibe it out, and you'll right. be able to feel that if you just pause for a moment and say, you know, what kind of energy am I receiving here? Is this good energy? You know, not yeah. to be too woo-woo, but just yeah. to be like, I feel like this is a safe zone, or ooh, this feels a little bit, so I am going to be a little self-protective. I mean, and because that's what your whole month is about, right? It's like self-protection, self-worth, and preserving that and making sure that that doesn't get hijacked by anybody else, you know, by accident.
Yeah.
That's great. Thank you.
Did we answer the question, Corinne, about cognitive bypass? Did you want to have other topics you wanted us to touch on? Hello, Samantha.
Hello.
Where are you, Samantha?
I'm in Manchester, in the UK.
Oh, in the UK, okay.
Okay, welcome.
Sex on the bridge, wow.
So the other...
You're muted, Corinne, if you're...
I think it's Captain Dean, and someone must have messed around with his profile settings and he doesn't know about it.
That, or he's got incredible confidence. One of the
That's really funny.
What about the members here of TCC Tribe? What questions do you have about communication? I know speaking from the heart can be so... Oh, am I? You know, I'm not mute. Can be so scary, and you may experience self-doubt. Am I saying the right thing? I don't want to hurt the other person. So maybe a question is, how do you have the courage or find the courage to start sharing how you really feel from the heart? I know from personal experiences, when I speak from the heart, it's normally when there's a conflict in my values. And it comes from a place of anger and frustration. And I'm just like, what? Like that. It's hard when you're in a, for example, intimate relationship, or if it's a family member, close friend, and you want to speak from the heart and all those thoughts are coming up. So how do you move past that?
So we were going to give you a fail-safe strategy to use for that in any relationship, whether it's personal or... Hello. Whether it's personal, professional, friend, whatever, we have found that the most successful way to do that, ready? You should write this down, is you put your biggest fear out in front. So if you know the person you're speaking with and you know that maybe that person will rise to anger right away with what you might approach with, or that person might shut down right away with what you might be saying, or that person might reject you or say, forget it, we're finished. So you put all of those obstacles that you're thinking about right out in front on the table. And so like the first thing you say is, okay, so Corinne, I'm just feeling a very nervous about bringing the subject up, but it's something really important to me and it's not aligning well with my values. And I feel like I need to say it because I respect and love or appreciate our relationship, and I don't want anything to tarnish that. And I still need to say this because I need to be true to myself. And I'm afraid that if what I'm going to say might make you, and then fill in the blank, shut down, get angry, turn against me, fire me, reject me, and I don't want that to happen. So could you help me and work with me on this? Because I'd really like to say this. So could I ask your help in receiving what I'm about to say? So something like that is usually a good softener for someone, and they usually, most people will be accepting and say, yeah, of course.
And if they're not, if they're not willing to do any of that, then it's probably not worthwhile being in a relationship or employment or whatever with that person.
Right. And so even if it's a really, you know, someone who's, you know, in their head all the time and they're not in their heart, you know, I really need you to listen with your heart for what I'm about to say. I know you like to analyze and use logic to disseminate all the information, but I really need you to try and be in your heart for what I'm about to say. You know, if you know the other person, appreciate where they're coming from first, how they might receive it, and then offer your ask, your request that they listen to you, you know, or receive what you're about to say as best they can.
It sounds like a source of communication.
Yes.
Yeah. And I reckon that it's all to do with timing, because if I'm emotionally charged.
You can't do it when you're mad. You can't.
No, exactly. If I'm emotionally charged, there's no ways I can have a heartfelt conversation. I'll just end up in tears.
One of the most important things.
And you
to
can
do.
Say that. Just real quick. You can say that, and I'm afraid that what I'm about to say might make me cry, and I don't want you to think there's something, you know, and say, I'm about to cry, and if I cry, it's okay, just let me finish, you know.
One of the tools we develop, sorry, someone's saying so?
Yeah, sorry, is the risk of that, but carrying on a conversation that could be put to bed and dealt with straight away, if you become emotionally charged, and you let it sit, it festers for longer rather than dealing with it there and then, like, you know, a blow up between a partner or an employee or whatever, dealt with on the spot, and you can be having drinks with them in an hour or at the bar after work on the same day that you've had the issue because you've dealt with it. And look, I it's a very tender thing, and look, I'm an emotional guy, and I'll be the first person to put it up, my hand up to that. And but in my personal life and in my current relationship, it is the best solid relationship I've ever been in, because if something goes wrong, we stop, we put the wine glass down, we look at each other, we talk about it, we get it very clean, very closed, we put it to bed, and we move on.
You know what? You just defined, I was just going to say, we have this tool, the emotional clock. And you probably can't even see it. It's backwards for you guys.
Oh, yeah.
But you just described when things start right off the bat, that's 1 o'clock. When you hit, that's confusion of some sort, something that's troubling you. And you're right. The way you deal with it is to talk about it right off the bat. If you don't talk about it, next thing you know, you start getting anxious about it. And then if you start feeling despair, you could feel shame and guilt. And then, Corinne, as you just described, you get angry about it. That's the next thing that builds up until you finally hit a wall. As we talked about, again, 6 o'clock is where people call us up usually when things are really bad, where you've hit a wall and you got to do something about it. But you're right, Captain. The best way to deal with it is right off the bat. Early as possible, when you feel something's wrong, talk about it, because people get in trouble when they don't. Often, again, the reason they don't talk about it is because they're afraid to talk about it.
Or they're afraid of their partners or
right.
their other person.
They're afraid
reaction.
Someone might say, like, you know, well, you know, I'm going to break up with you, or I'm going to fire you if you say anything like that. And if that is the case, then it wasn't a worthwhile relationship to be with anyways. If it's that tender, you can't even have a simple discussion about something between you.
But Dean, I agree with you.
Totally do.
With, you know, even because we work on this every day, even with us, we have that and say, yeah, I'm not really sure what's bugging me here. I got something festering. But right now we have a call, but in an hour from now, we're going to come back and revisit this. So it's always to schedule the soonest possible time that you can address whatever tiny little insignificant things, so it doesn't, of course, blow up.
And sometimes you don't know what that happened to me. It often has to do with other relationships you've had, maybe other wounds you've had that somehow someone stepped on a landmine there they didn't know that they stepped on. And, you know, and there's little triggers we all have. It's something that just sets you off in some way. You often don't even know what it is.
It could be an ex-partner. It could be a parent that did something that this reminded you of, and, you know, someone bossing you around or something, and it just doesn't sit well. And so you come back with a sharper response than you wanted to, and then you have an issue, you know. So thank you for sharing that. It's really important. It's important. And then if you do get in a situation where there's conflict and tension and it starts to escalate in that exchange that you're having, take a little time out, say, okay, let's call a timeout here. And let's just, we always say to get up, leave the room, leave your physical space that you're in, go for a walk, go take your dog out, go on top of the deck, whatever you need to do to just get some clear space. And then make an agreement before that said, let's come back and visit this tonight, tomorrow, in an hour, whatever it is.
And so make sure you address it, Dean, just like you said, the sooner the better.
Yes, so that you can go have that drink with them in an hour, you know, and then it's over.
Yeah, very much so. And, you know, I sort of tend to let that roll into my work now too, because it's been so successful. I've been with my partner now for like 2.5 years. And I was like, for the first year, we didn't have a row at all. And I think it's just because of the openness and the communication when things slight to stray, like, no, don't do that. I don't like it. Okay, great. Because, you know, the first couple of years, it's such a learning curve for relationships anyway, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. Dean, can I ask, is your partner male or female?
Female.
Okay. Because lots of times when we've worked with males, and this is generally speaking, of course, they tend to get right to the point. And women sometimes are so nuanced in their expressiveness that it's hard for men to understand that, because they just like, give it to me straight, you know, and women go around and they tend to they beat around the bush. They think men should be
nice. They think we should figure it out.
Yeah.
Yes. And so it's,
I always get around and say that whenever women ask a question and say, do men think this way? And I go, oh, no, we don't think at all, basically. Just make that assumption. It'll be much safer off if you think that we don't think, and tell them what you're feeling, what you're thinking. We're not going to figure it out, probably. Just don't expect us to guess it.
And just to carry this one bit further, when you are going to, if you have something on a ship, let's say you have a new guest list coming on, and the captain or the officers or somebody has expectations, but they're not delivering that information to the rest of the crew, you could ask as the crew person yourself, you could say, I know we have this big group coming on, or this important group, or whatever. I mean, everybody is important, right? The guests, but what are your expectations for us as we go forward in the next few weeks here? And so ask them those questions so that you're not thrown off. I don't know if that happens. I'm just taking a guess here.
Speculating.
I don't know if that happens, that sometimes if the expectations are not clear, people get really uncomfortable and they don't know how to speak up. Does that ever happen? I don't know.
Well, for me anyway, I think people definitely find their voice. I think this industry has changed tenfold, and junior crew have definitely found their voice. There's nothing they don't want for or ask anymore. It's 180 degrees different to when I joined yachting, that's for sure, 30 years ago, you know, for how people and crew voice their opinions, which is a great thing too, because, you know, then that way you know where they're standing as well. Mm. And you pick up on their idiosyncrasies, because if they stop asking, you know something's wrong.
Right.
Good point.
Very good point.
And Dean, I mean, that's not to say that you shouldn't. I mean, I hope you offer expectations that you have for your crew, even though they know everything or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, right? For sure. You know, there's always expectations or the requirements to fulfill their role. But, you know, I think definitely crew in this day and age are more aware of speaking up and speaking their mind and finding their place within the industry, or that's my opinion anyway, being, I guess, so-called at the top of my industry.
Poppy and Jeff, I've just got two questions, but before you address them, I'm going to open it up to the floor to see if there's any other questions. But just to park my questions, the one is, how would you recommend firing a narcissist or letting go of a narcissist? And then the other thing was, I did put in the Facebook group the PDF that you sent me. So just talking a little bit about art therapy and how that is useful. But before you answer those, I just want to put it to the floor. Does anyone else have any questions? The topic of conversation today is healthy communication, speaking from the heart. And we're also talking about narcissists and their behaviors and how to deal with them. You can put your virtual hand up. Yeah, Dean?
If no one else says, I don't want to hog the screen, but...
Hey, you kind of are, Dean, but it's okay.
Okay.
So, no, we want to hear you.
Rightly or wrongly, I class men and women in two categories. If they get into a problem or you have a problem on board, whether it's a relationship or on board the boat, women will put it in a box and put it on the shelf, but every box is interconnected. It will always come back.
Yep.
Yep.
A man will put it in a box, put the lid on it, put it on the shelf, and you'll never hear about it again.
And they don't touch any other boxes.
And they don't touch any other boxes. There's no right. crossover. There's no nothing.
Nope.
Right.
Why is it like that, do you think? Why do some people tend to... So my partner doesn't do that. Her boxes aren't interconnected. They don't... It never comes back and bites me later. So why, as a general rule, and correct me if you don't think that's a generalization or not, but, you know, why does it tend to be like that, where nothing's ever off the table with some people but forgotten about by others?
So you raise a really important point, and I love your question. When I used to teach psychology, one of the most fascinating things I learned was that the women's brains have, I think, 927 more synapses than the male brain. And this is from early, you know, from the earliest of human creation. That a woman was tuned into hearing those nuances, hearing a baby's cry, for instance, being able to perceive and observe things that men don't. And they just, like, biologically, we are gifted that way, if you will. And so, I mean, like, lots of times we make fun of it. And I was like, that's okay. He doesn't have enough synapses.
I don't have quite the capacity she
does. But not to make light of it. And women, because they are predisposed to have that nurturing and the expressive gene for creation and procreation and survival, they just sometimes, and maybe they haven't learned. Maybe it's social... influence too. They haven't learned how to, or didn't feel they had the permission to communicate in a clear way. They were taught to be sort of submissive or whatever, depending on the culture in which they were raised. So it's a lot of those things together. I think today you're more apt to find women who are be willing to say, okay, we're done, we're closure, done, throw away the key, we're done, we're not revisiting this. Because we've seen both male and female do this also, where they're in a conflict of some sort, in a discussion, and somebody feels threatened. It's usually the ego, somebody, male or female. And then they bring up the old past stuff that's called gunny sacking, where they open up, it's like a gunny sack of all the old conflicts. And then they start pulling out all the old conflicts and saying, well, remember the time you did this and the last time you said that, and or you always say this or you never say that. And so these are really destructive ways in which relationships fall apart, you know.
Yeah, and Natalie, we see your comments, you know, and we, you're absolutely can be right. You know, this is again the idea of if you don't deal with this, you know, Dean, we said this right off the bat, you know, if there's something wrong and you don't deal with it, this can be where things, this is often where relationships come to can blow up, where they haven't dealt with something. And it explodes in some obscure way. You know, we say people get divorced over, you know, a broken dish in the kitchen, you know, and that they didn't get divorced over that. It was
right, the pressure cooker.
It was something else. There was dozens of other things, or that one big thing, maybe whatever it was, that was never dealt with. So, you know, the pressure cooker. Exactly. There you go.
Does that help at all, Dean? Okay, good. Thank you. So, Corinne, back to your question. I mean, how to deal with a narcissist on the ship, for instance, it's really hard. First of all, I would never say the word narcissist to anyone. I would never use that word. It just is a way, I think, to reframe this. I think if you are working or in a relationship with a narcissist, you can reframe this by, you can get amazing training. This is the positive reframe here, by learning how to understand what your value is, what your needs are, and to set appropriate boundaries. So you may have a point, maybe like you, Jackie, where you would say, okay, enough. I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not going to accept or tolerate this inappropriate, disrespectful behavior. And so you create the barometer or the marker there for you to decide when you're going to tolerate it or not. And I think any kind of confrontation toward a narcissist is usually going to backfire. It usually does. And so you don't ever want to come in blazing, you know, because they actually like a fight. They actually like the challenge because they're going to win no matter what.
Yeah, Corinne,
do something.
You asked the question, like, how do you fire them? You know, you can almost expect a conflict if you're trying to fire one, that they will never acknowledge that they've done things wrong or incomplete or inappropriate, whatever it is. The way to fire them is in fairly direct and quick fashion and try to move on, because
what we've been saying,
it won't probably go well.
We've been saying lately in our world, whenever there's somebody that poses like a wonky energy or something, we'll say, you know what? This is not in a this is not in alignment with my divine good or my highest purpose or whatever. And you could use words like that. I'm so sorry, but you know, the way that and I would never use you statements. I would say I statements. Mm. I would say I just don't feel that our values are aligned anymore. And the less you say, the better.
Mm.
And I'll just put this out there real quick because we have like 1 minute left. We had a client this week who was divorcing, and she was always apologizing and going back and making excuses for her soon-to-be ex's behavior. And he will always come at her, and he'll say things like, you know, wow, last year, you know, we had these great memories and you're throwing it all away. And she just said two words to him. You know, she texted two words to him. She said, I know. And just, it's sort of like you take the wind out of the sails, so to speak. You don't.
Because they want you to engage. They want you to get a fight going.
So if you could fire someone like that with as few words as possible, that would be the best. And then to get back to your
art therapy, are you hard and fast on an hour here, or do you want to?
Yes.
That's okay.
So what,
yeah.
We got our little mandalas.
Yeah.
So does everybody know what a mandala is? Yeah, everybody? Dean, you too? Tim? So it's a Sanskrit word for a sacred circle. And
look at Pop, look.
Ah,
Samantha's got a beautiful
Samantha.
One. There you go.
Okay, she gets
live
five.
In the moment. Oh, you just knocked it out of the park here.
Five gold stars for you, Samantha. Five gold stars. So it's something.
That's a baseball term, by the way, if you didn't figure out what I was saying.
So it's a wonderful way for calming, soothing, especially Corinne, when you were saying, you know, sometimes I get really heated up over something. It's a great way just to even start. You know, there's a wonderful brain head hand tactile correlation when we're actually writing with our hands versus like journaling. I would never journal on a computer or a laptop. I would use handwritten because there's a big connection there that it softens and diffuses the fear center in our brain, the amygdala that's feeling anxious or angry or whatever it is feeling. And so the drawing in a contained space makes it very calming and soothing to do. And I don't know what else yeah. You want to know about art therapy.
Yeah, no, I know it integrates the left and right hemispheres of the brain, and it's good for insomnia, managing anxiety. So there is a physiological impact through doing a mandala style art therapy. Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, thank you so much for your time and all the shares, and for our members here, you know, taking the courage to share their story too. That's so helpful.
Yes, thank you.
Just wondering if there's one more last question, and then if anyone's got a takeaway that they want to share, it's just valuable for us to know what resonated with you. You don't all have to share today, but if you do have a takeaway, please do share.
I would like just to revisit what we were just chatting about when we were talking about firing a narcissist, if I were resigning from something, or you just wanted to say, this isn't working with, this is goes against my core values. Like if you say like something about my core values isn't in alignment, and this is why this isn't working, how do you continue that conversation without offending that person? Or, you know, what if they say, well, what do you mean? What do you mean your core values aren't aligned? Like, and then how do you go from there? How do you diffuse?
I think you would always come back to the I statements. You would never say the word you, because that's confrontational. And just say, you know, I've been doing a lot of introspection and some journaling, and I'm just not sure that this is, if you're leaving, right? This is if you're leaving, right?
Yeah.
I think I've discovered that I think I have a different purpose to serve, and this is no longer in alignment with that. And whether you go on another ship or not, it doesn't matter. Mm. You know, another yacht, it doesn't matter. You're just saying it to this person. This is not in alignment. And so you're never going to say, because I don't like ABC, you're just going to say, it's always extracting you. I mean, I know that that's a common thing in relationships. People go, oh, are you going to give me that? It's not you, it's me. But I mean, that is basically what we're saying.
Yeah.
Is that a Steinfeld flashback there, George Costanza? I invented it. It's you, not me. I mean, come on.
All right. Anybody else have something? Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you.
Forever hold your peace.
I'm just very sad I missed the first half an hour.
And it was brilliant too, Gina. It was absolutely fabulous.
You
really
can get the
it.
Replay.
Yeah, Dean, I send an email at 6:30 a.m. every Monday, and there's about five posts to links in Facebook.
Here's what you missed, Dean. We were college sweethearts. We got split up for 32 years. Look at that. That's 32 years, man. And if you want to know more about the, we actually wrote a book called 1 Billion Seconds. So that'll catch you right up on the whole thing.
Okay. just really quickly on that narcissist thing, I don't, whether I'm enough, whether I feel that I'm confident enough, but I tend to make them talk and talk them into the situation where they feel they need to leave. Because if I have someone on board the boat that's not fitting in and they're creating all the problems, I get them up on the bridge and try and talk them around to make them feel like they're the ones that need to move because it's the right decision on their behalf. But that could be because I'm slight, you know, again, being the captain and people don't sometimes push back, but, you know, I tried to drive it in the other direction from what you were saying rather than
talk. That's absolutely right, because the way you can ever deal with them is to make them feel like they won. That's the only way it ever works, and that's exactly what you just did, is they feel like they won.
And especially if you bring them up on the bridge, and I mean, oh my gosh, I mean, just the metaphorically or figuratively speaking, you're bringing them up high, you're bringing them on this bridge, which is a transitional space, wanting them to make that transition. It's a great, you've set the stage for a perfect scenario for that to happen. And you can praise them and say, yeah, I think you'd be so good at in this other field, or you'd be good in this area, or
are you somewhere laughing? Else. Yeah, I am.
Natalie's got her hand up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that having personally had to fire a really bad narcissist, I just used the approach of like passing the grenade off to someone else, put the pin back in, hand it off to someone else and let them explode somewhere else. And just it's a strategic move and it's a little unpleasant, but if you can find them another job or another opportunity where you know that it's going to be a tougher team and they can deal with that kind of person and they just can leave on their own volition because they have another opportunity. And it sounds like a bit of a dirty move, but at least if you're handing that person off to, again, a stronger team or a boat that's in this case it would be a boat, but yeah, just pass on the problem to someone else and don't necessarily validate what they're doing, and then it's
because they don't stop.
Yep. You're right. No, they won't. You're absolutely correct.
You can't change the behavior.
You're not going to change them.
So if you know that going in, you're already ahead of the game.
Well said, Natalie. Yeah. I like that pin back in the grenade thing. That's good. That's good. Mm-hmm. Good metaphor.
Mm-hmm. Great. Okay. So do we have any takeaways from this session? What are you walking away with?
I want to come on.
I'd say anybody who says sex on the bridge is their name has got to be a fabulous guy.
People are going to die tomorrow. Believe me.
Yeah, right.
On the bridge tomorrow.
Why? What are you doing tomorrow?
Well, whoever's been playing with my computer.
Oh, that's what I said to everyone. I'm like, someone's fiddled with his settings because I'm like, oh, okay.
No, you know, my honest takeaway is just the fact you need to stay strong to your own values and be proud of what you believe in, stand firm, but just don't be rude about it. You know, we are complete individuals. The world would be boring if everyone was the same. Respect people's differences, but stay true to yourself.
Mm-hmm. Well said.
Love it.
Excellent.
I was just going to say, Jackie, I appreciate you sharing your story of taking a huge, courageous step and leaving one place and taking time off and getting, you know, 8 months worth of a different kind of journey, getting yourself feeling the love again from people that you know, like, and trust. And I think that that's a wonderful self compassionate caring that you give to yourself. So bravo to you.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it really, like, that 8 months off was a lot of going back to crew I'd work with and having conversations and just sort of realizing the behavior that had come out of it. Like, so I really did question who I was, if I could still put what I was doing. And yeah, so it was I didn't know at the time what was going on. I just kind of thought, like, oh, he's really mean and this isn't nice, but now
you were healing and finding yourself right. again.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, I know we've enjoyed so much talking to you. Poppy and I have loved the times we've been at sea. You know, we've done bigger cruise ships, and I've been a lifelong sailor, small boat, dinghy sailor. So I always love sailing, love the water, love being at sea.
Well, thank you so much both for your time and sharing your knowledge with us.